Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Wednesday, the 22nd of April, Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour of the program. It's been a little while since we've spoken with Nancy. So my question for you this hour, and you may have questions for Nancy, but I'm interested in what you're reading. And it can be fiction, it can be nonfiction. If you have questions about books, recommendations for – she's just marvelous. She can – pull from her mind all kinds of book recommendations from years and years ago, current books. If you've read something you liked, what should you read next? She's really good at answering that. Books for children, for adolescents, for adults. Nancy has written a number of books. She is the author of Book Lust, More Book Lust, Book Crush, which is one for young people. She's former director of the Seattle Public Library. She's the developer of that program, that marvelous program, If All of Seattle Read the Same Book, which of course spread all over the country and all over the world as well. She's a regular commentator on NPR's Morning Edition, and she, in the year 2004, I like always to announce this, was the 50th winner of the Women's National Book Association Award for her extraordinary contribution to the world of books. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Call as early as you'd like. We'd like to take many, many phone calls for Nancy. Or if you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well. That's talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Nancy.
So nice to be with you again.
Yeah, it's always terrific to have you on the air. How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. What are you reading?
Well, I'm working on a new book.
Are you?
I am. It's going to be called Wanderlust, and it's good books about, it's good armchair travel books, good exploring, books about walking, journeys that probably shouldn't have been taken. You know, that section is going to be called It Seemed Like a Good Idea at the Time. So I'm doing a lot of that reading, but of course I'm doing other reading too, and there's at least two wonderful new novels that are out that I think that you would like.
Okay.
They're very, very different from one another, but equally well-written and equally, I think, pleasurable. And the first is called Little Bee by a man named Chris Cleave, C-L-E-A-V-E. And it's the story of a British woman and a young Nigerian teenager whose lives intersect on a beach in Nigeria while the civil war there is raging on. And as a result of that chance encounter, it's how all of their lives are just thrown into the air and just become totally different from what either one of them thought it could possibly be. It's heartbreaking. There's other readers have found little bits of humor in it. It's hard. I see that there's a little bit lighter parts, particularly when the British woman is interacting with her son, who's just a delight to read about. But overall, this is really a heartbreaker of a book, but fabulous.
You know, I know somebody who's reading it, too. I'm trying to remember when I asked her, what are you reading? Somebody said Little Bee. Okay, good.
And the second one is set in New Orleans and the whole kind of up the Mississippi from New Orleans right after World War I. Mm. And it's about a World War I vet who comes home with the nickname Lucky. Always a mistake in a novel, I think, to be nicknamed Lucky, because it's sure to just be ironic. And he's gotten a job as a floor walker, a kind of store policeman, for this big department store in New Orleans, and on his watch, a little girl is kidnapped, and he decides that he's fired, of course, but he decides that he's going to find her, and in the course of finding her, he really finds himself. It's really funny, Kevin, because it's written by a writer. This is his fourth work of fiction, his third novel, and I had always consigned him to the kind of Southern Gothic tough books that are often not what I enjoy, although I admire the writing of Larry Brown and people like that. But they're not the kind of books that I want to embrace somehow. And then I just picked this up and discovered that that's not who he is at all. I mean, he's not that kind of Southern Gothic, scary, psychologically scary sort of person. So been great discovering him. And, you know, always leaves me a little lingering piece of guilt. Oh, why didn't I hear about him? Or why didn't I read about him long ago? But
don't worry, you have time.
I know, right.
There is a lot of reading ahead, Nancy, yeah, for you. Yeah, no doubt about it. And you recommended in the last couple of months when you talked about walking, I loved some of these facts, the lost art of walking, the history, science, philosophy, and literature of pedestrianism.
Yes, by Jeff Nicholson. And that's just fabulous for anybody who likes humorous looks at a topic. Jeff Nicholson, forever I, too, will describe my walking falls as being a disagreement with gravity. That's how he described one bad fall he took when he was walking.
Ooh. And the people who were walkers, we hear about that every now and then, but here's a book that you could read and you know who created great work when he or she was on a walk, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's one of those books that has all these little bits, in addition to the pleasure of being in the author's company, because he's a wonderful storyteller. You learn all of these little facts, like how Velcro was invented. The inventor actually thought of the notion of Velcro as he was taking a walk.
Do you have wanderlust right now, Nancy?
You know, I more have armchair wanderlust. I have a little bit of, I think, age-related wanderlust. but I don't. I don't. You know, it's not something. I understand it, but I don't think that I've ever really suffered from wanderlust.
Right. Well, I guess books are a way to do that, to go so many different places, right?
They are. It's been a way to make my life extremely full. But I can see, last year I was in Estonia for a week.
You were?
Uh-huh. Yes, it was the National Library Week of Estonia, and the cultural attaché at the American Embassy in Estonia invited me to come do programs all over Estonia, and it was so fun and interesting to kind of see a country through its libraries, as it were.
Now, there's an invitation that doesn't come all the time.
No, I know.
Oh, it sure doesn't. Well, I haven't done a heck of a lot of reading other than newspapers lately, because I tend to read, you know, nonfiction.
Right.
But I did like, and I think you would like, The Lost City of Z.
Oh, I loved that book.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes.
I thought you might like that.
Yes, I loved that book, and I immediately thought that people who liked John Krakauer's Into Thin Air or those other armchair adventure books, The Perfect Storm, would really like The Lost City of Z. There's enough adrenaline to get those people into it. And then there's all that wonderful history and the whole exploring the Amazon.
Yes, and from a guy who gets lost on the subway, a real city guy who does this.
Right.
I just love that.
Right, nearsighted.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Right. Let's go to phone calls. Our lines are all busy for you. I don't want to hold up the audience. 800-486-8655. And Nancy Pearl is our guest. Heidi from Clear Lake is our first caller. Nancy. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was hoping you could recommend my next book. I'm a stay-at-home mom of two, and I'm currently reading Kathleen Norris's Acedia and Me. I believe I heard her on this program. Anyway, and I'm also a fan of Jane Goodall, her first book that chronicled her beginnings. And I was wondering if you'd heard of either of these books, and if you could recommend my next adventure. I only have about 10, 15 minutes a day to read.
Right, right. Always a problem with little ones at home.
Yeah.
Now, have you read Kathleen Norris's earlier books?
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay, her right first there. Book, I think, is really, really wonderful, more or less about her search for living a spiritual life or a life with a big spiritual component.
Okay.
So that's one suggestion. Another suggestion that you might want to look at is a book called The Zookeeper's Wife.
Okay.
By Diane Ackerman.
Okay.
A poet and an essayist. And she is writing about the zoo in Warsaw, Poland during World War II, and especially the zookeepers. And it's really a page-turner.
Oh, it sounds great.
It's just absolutely wonderful.
Okay, so it might not be quite. I'm loving Kathleen Norris's book, but it's so heavy that I'm digesting it very slowly.
Yes,
it might be nice to have a more page turner.
Right, yeah. And if you want to stick with nonfiction, her first book, I think, is more personal in a way.
Okay.
So it's not going to be quite as heavy as that one. And then The Zookeeper's Wife is really like, it's a biographical mystery in a
great
way. But it's so beautifully written because Diane Ackerman is such a good writer.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Kathleen, I have to share with you something exciting.
Oh, good, Nancy.
All the listeners. I was one of the fiction judges for the Pulitzer Prizes for fiction this year.
Were you really, Nancy? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ah.
It was such an honor to be one of the three judges for fiction. So now I can talk about it.
Oh, terrific. And, you know, I know who won nonfiction because we had him on, John Meacham, but
yes.
I forgot who won fiction.
It's a book called Olive Kitteridge by Elizabeth Strout.
Okay.
And I know I've talked about it on the air in my reviews here, because the main character is a novel written in short stories. And the main character, Olive Kitteridge, appears in all of them, either face-on, either with her as the main character, or with her as a side character reacting to or being talked about by the minor characters. And the thing about Olive Kitteridge, about the character, is that she is not at first you are not going to like her at all. And the first time that I started reading the book, I had to put it down because I thought she was so mean to her husband that I couldn't stand it. And then I picked it up again and got to see beyond it. And once you get to know Olive, and the writing is so wonderful. So I just am so happy that was the book.
Oh, that must have been a great honor. So how many books did you read
I think there were, I'm not exactly sure, but the number 140 comes into mind.
No.
But many, right.
That's
a
lot.
They're nominated by publishers. So and the great thing was that you work with two other judges, so every Sunday we would sit down and email one another about what we had been reading and about what our thoughts are and what books were rising to the top and what books we had let go of, and it was so interesting.
Oh, I would imagine. And you've added to history, haven't you?
Yes.
Which is quite something.
That's what made it the most, in some ways, so meaningful, is that it was adding to history. A Pulitzer book. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
Right.
That's great. Thanks, Heidi, very much for the call. Let's go to Anne from Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I'd like to recommend a book since this is Earth Day.
Sure.
And the title is The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan, and it's an oral history of the Great American Dust Bowl. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I thought that it was just because of prolonged drought. What I didn't realize was that it had a lot to do with our ignorance as human beings. If I could just read two short sentences from the book that kind of encapsulate it. Of all the countries in the world, we Americans have been the greatest destroyers of land of any race of people, barbaric or civilized. At the start of the dust storms, this is a quote. What was happening was sinister, a symptom of our stupendous ignorance. They plowed up the prairies. I think it's an incredible book. We're reading it for a book club, and normally my group does not like to read quote-unquote depressing books. And at first I thought, oh, this is just painful to read, and it's depressing. But as I read, I thought, there is a really strong lesson here that we need to learn. And today particularly, I think it's a good lesson for us, and I highly recommend the book.
Thank you, Anne.
I would absolutely second that. That is a fabulous book to read. Tim Egan is a great storyteller. He has his facts all in order, and he really brings that period to life through talking to people who actually, when the dust storms hit in Oklahoma, didn't move to California as John Steinbeck's characters, as the Joad family did, but tried to sit it out. But the thing that really struck me, as it did you, was the fact that so much of this was man-made, that we destroyed the prairies, thinking that would have no effect. And, of course, it was horrible.
Thank you, Ann, so much. This is what I love about you, Nancy. Somebody calls with us and you've read the darn book. It just always amazes me.
Well, it's not going to happen often.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Thanks, Ann, for the call. And she talked about her book club. We have an email from somebody asking you this. My friends and I have recently started a monthly book club. Do you have any suggestions, Nancy, on how to conduct the choosing of the monthly book?
Well, the problem is that that's a much longer discussion than we probably have time for, but one of the things that you want to do is make sure that the books that you're choosing are good books to discuss, which are different in many times from books that are good to read.
Oh.
You know, because when you look at the New York Times bestseller list, what you're looking at books, you're looking at books in which story is the major, the moving force in those books. They're story-driven. And for a book club, what you want is character-driven books. You want books in which characters make decisions that you can then react to as a reader, or books with an ambiguous ending that you can discuss about what happened. Why did the author choose to leave this untied up, that kind of thing.
Right.
But most book clubs choose their books that everybody in turn gets to pick a book that they want the group to read, and then in some ways leads the discussion about it. That's one of the ways to do it. A way I like to do it is that everybody brings two or three books, and the group votes on it, but does kind of weighted voting so that everybody gets like 50 pennies, and you can put all of your pennies or the majority of your pennies on any particular book. And so if you really want a book and you put all your 50 pennies on it, it's bound to be chosen.
That's wonderful. That's a really good idea. Really good. Let's just talk about poetry for just a moment. I went to Galesburg, Illinois over spring break to look at a college with my son, which, of course, was an Abraham Lincoln rich in history college. But it was also the home birthplace of Carl Sandburg. So In the bookstore, I got some Carl Sandburg, who I've always loved but haven't read in years.
Right.
And just loved reading him again. And one of your recent recommendations, and you also, I didn't know, had been copying down poems and quotations that strike you in a series of notebooks. So you've recommended What Goes On, Selected and New Poems by Stephen Dunn.
Right.
Tell me about him.
Oh, Stephen Dunn is somebody who can just take life and turn it into a poem.
Mm.
And he understands emotions in a way that his poems don't. I mean, he is able to get to the heart of things in a way that I find a lot of poems don't for me. And he's one of those poets who usually for both narrative and poetry, it's always the poem itself or this particular book that I'm so fond of. But with him, I feel like it's this whole book that I like, that there'll be parts of poems or whole poems in every one of his books. And this is a collection. His new book that's just out is a collection. And so you get the best of the earlier books as well.
I don't know of him, and this I don't know why I'm really into poetry these days.
Oh.
To reading it out loud, and I don't know why.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, try this one.
Okay.
And then there's also a poet, a young poet called Paul Guest. And the thing that about Paul Guest, and he has a new book of poetry out just now as well, but what sort of informs his poetry is the fact that he was paralyzed when he was 12 years old from a bicycle accident.
Oh, yes, I read your recommendation.
So his poems are about living that life and how that informs everything that he does. But they're not, it's not that he's not writing poetry. I mean, you could see how it could turn into prose so easily, but it's poetry, and it's absolutely, it's just stunning.
Hmm. And how do you spell his last name, Nancy?
Oh, G-U-E-S-T.
Be my guest. Okay.
Do you want to hear how?
Oh, yes.
Well, here's how the poem Bad Mood, which begins. Bad mood and bad dog and bad luck, like my broken neck or heart or head, playing out so much bad weather, like kinked yarn unraveled by a bad black cat, which summons luck again, that diffident lover half naked in the dark. Isn't that fabulous?
Ooh.
And here's how he starts the poem, My Life Among. I'm beginning to dream of my life among the ornamental, the vaguely functional, The Doorsteps and Paperweights, My Tenure in the Legion of Lawn Gnomes, My Brotherhood with Novelty Decanters, My Solidarity with the Generally Useless, The Inscrutably Devised, The Deformed Idea, The Elvis Clock, The Flea Market Phantasm, The Broken Stapler Clicking Toothlessly, The Pen Caddy Unpenned. Can you imagine describing yourself as vaguely functional? They're so wonderful. Strong collection.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. I'll follow through on both those. Nancy Perrell, our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls for Nancy Perrell, Michelle from Denmark, Wisconsin. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I was calling with some recommendations. I'm sure your guest has read these, but I'm a veterinarian, and I just can't get enough of reading about animals, and I've sort of had this genre of dog books recently that I've been reading.
You're my kind of gal.
And, of course, I started with Marley and Me. That was fantastic. And then I read two books by John Katz.
Yes.
A Dog Year and A Good Dog, and they were It was such a great story.
You have to read Izzy and Lenore, too, which is about hospice dogs. Mm-hmm.
And then my favorite book, though, I'd actually heard parts of it on Chapter of a Day on NPR, was Merle's Door. I can't remember the author's name, but that was just a fantastic book, and I would highly recommend that, especially with kind of the armchair traveling desire, too, because this man's life with his dog was just incredible.
Huh. And it's called Izzy's Door?
Merle.
Oh, I'm back with Kathleen's suggestion.
No, Izzy and Lenore is Katz's book. Yeah.
Okay, and Merle's Door.
Merle's Door. Okay. Yeah, and I can't remember the author's name.
Okay, I can find it. I'm a librarian.
You're a super librarian. You can find it easily. You know, I know people are sick of hearing stories about me and dogs, but I've got this dog thing going on, too. Yesterday, I was bringing my son home from school, and there was a big sign, puppies for sale, in a house close to where I live, and we didn't see any puppies, and it was freezing cold. And all night long, I kept thinking, well, I'm supposed to just go and get one of those puppies. It's just, it gets in the, I have a dog, and the dog wouldn't get along with a puppy, but the whole night I was imagining, what would it like to have a puppy in the house, and you go through this whole story, and I'm with you on this dog thing, and I know, Nancy, you have dog books, too. You've recommended many of them.
Yeah, in fact, I think in either Booklust or More Booklust, I did lots of books in which dogs, I did a lot of novels in which dogs play a central role, and those were really fun. But the big dog book, the big fictional dog book now, I think, is the story of Edgar Sawtelle, David Robleski's Oprah Choice, and wonderfully satisfying novel. But if you read that one, the story of Edgar Sawtelle, which has just a fabulous dog in it, he was talking about a book that meant a lot to him, and that is a book by a writer named William Maxwell called So Long, See You Tomorrow, which also has a terrific dog in it. So that's always fun for me to find dogs in fiction as well.
So Long, See You Tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay. Michelle, thank you, unless you had more.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you. I was also going to just comment, another genre I've kind of read was sort of Middle Eastern books, and I read two by Azar Nafisi.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
You've recommended one, Nancy.
Yes, and her new one is much more of a true memoir.
The Things
I've Been Silent About, yes. Yeah.
That was great. And reading Lolita in Tehran, both of those I think would be good for a book club. And another one by a different author called Kabul Beauty School.
Yeah, that one, there's some dispute about that, about how much of a, well, I don't want to go into what the dispute is, but there's kind of a dispute about it, either about its veracity or, let's see. What's his name? Nadim Aslam, A-S-L-A-M, has a new book set in Afghanistan, which is just wonderful. and a writer named Camilla Shamsie, S-H-A-M-S-I-E. Her book, Broken Verses, is set, which is my favorite of hers. She has a brand new one either out or just coming out. But Broken Verses was a few years ago, and it's set in Pakistan. And it's fabulous, in contemporary Pakistan.
Oh, fantastic. I'll have to check that out.
Good.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you gave us a name, but we've had about 6 calls from people wondering, maybe they just didn't capture it, the New Orleans soldier.
Oh, I didn't give you the name.
All right.
It's called The Missing.
The Missing.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Oh, and it just, he goes on this riverboat from New Orleans all the way up the river to Kentucky, the Mississippi River, the Ohio River, and just, he's wonderful at portraying the life of the riverboat, and it's just a great book.
Mm. Well, from a woman who read 140 books for the Pulitzer and reads more books than anybody I ever know, I always take note when you say something like this. Crossing California is one of my all-time favorite novels, one of the few books that I actually own, and I reread it often. Now that I starred.
This was the first novel, and it's about a group of teenagers growing up in a suburb of Chicago where California Street, the dividing line between the upper middle class and the middle and lower middle classes. And there are some characters in that book, especially one teenage girl character that I will, that I've never been able to forget.
Aww.
Every time I think about her, I just smile.
Oh.
Now, he did write a sequel to it, which is good, but it didn't, for me, do the same thing that first book did.
Okay, Crossing California, Adam Langer.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Thanks, Michelle, for your call. Let's go to John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Well, Kathleen, you're going to have to promise us that your next dog will be a Scottish Terrier.
Well, you can just tell me all about them, because I'm open to all kinds of dogs.
Well, you missed a very eventful road trip, and in that light, I always want to make sure your readers pick up Bob McGee's book, The Greatest Ballpark Ever, The Story of Ebbets Field, especially after making the road trip to see these two unfortunate new ballparks in New York and to realize what we've lost with the demolition of the Polo Grounds and Ebbets Field. They're selling this ballpark on nostalgia out in Flushing, and it's not working very well. So Bob McGee's book. I want everybody to pick up this biography of Father Gerard Manley Hopkins, or Jared Manley Hopkins, by this English professor at Boston University. I think he's a poet that we need to read a lot more of in the upcoming years. And let's make a concerted effort to get all the listeners of your show to say that they finished James Joyce's Ulysses, that never won a single award, but it's the greatest novel ever written, and it throws you back to the archetypes. If you pick up Ulysses, you have to pick up Homer. So let's make sure that the 828 pages of Ulysses get read, and maybe you can bring your guests back on June 16th,
2009.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the call. Tell me about the Scottish Terrier. I must confess, I never finished Ulysses. I have read most of it, but have you? You probably
no.
read the whole thing.
No.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, great, no. Nancy. Okay.
I'm in limbo with you when it comes to Ulysses.
Yeah. Hopkins, boy, there's somebody I haven't read since when? College? High school?
Right. Margaret, Are You Grieving?
Yeah.
Which is really a wonderful poem. One of the things I would say to book groups out there is that doing poetry in your book group
is a great idea.
Just such a, will just give you an added dimension, a lovely added dimension, and just have everybody bring their favorite poem or a poem that they loved and just read it out loud, maybe hand out copies to everybody, and just talk about it, not as though you were in an English class, not having to get at the symbolism or what different words mean, but just what's the sound of the poem, and then what's the sense of the poem.
Right. I think that's a great idea. Thank you very much, John, for your call. Quinn is next from Oshkosh. Hi, Quinn.
Hi.
Hi.
Kathleen, I never get sick of you talking about dogs, ever, ever, ever. I'm a big dog lover.
Good,
and,
good.
You know, I'm so glad that you said Izzy and Lenore again, because I have it on reserve at the library. I have to get that. It fits in my life. I work as a nurse in a nursing home, so I really have to get that sometime.
Yes, you do.
I just love the dogs that come. I just love them. But Merle's dog, the author is Ted Carasotti, and that is a wonderful book, and so is Edgar Sawtelle. And Edgar Sawtelle is that is a Wisconsin story, so it's really it's integral to us. But also, I am reading a book, and all these books I get them from public radio. I just cannot thank you enough for being there, because you just make my morning. I work a PM shift, so I listen all morning. And Kathleen, I'm so glad you're back. I have to say, there is a book that I heard about on public radio. By Nora Vincent. And she was on in the afternoon. She was talking about going into psychiatric institutions as a patient. So I read that book, and now I can't think of the title, but I think it was something like Self-Something Madness. And she talks about she's a reporter, so she's talking about what she sees there and how she's treated as a patient. And so now I'm reading Self-Made Man, the same author, Nora Vincent, and her experiences as an undercover man. And she is so smart. This woman is so, she's just so introspective, and as well, she takes in these people that she meets undercover. She's someone else. But then she does tell them. She's an honest person. She does tell them, you know, at the end or somewhere in the middle. In this book, she goes into a monastery. She goes into strip clubs. She joins a bowling team. And I've been telling women at work about it because it's just so... It's so different, and you know, I just love to read. I just love to read because it takes you somewhere else.
Was there a movie about this too?
I think it's an older book.
Okay,
this one, the new one, is called Self-Made Man.
Okay,
yeah, this one could be older, but now she's written the one about going into the institution.
Yeah, and that's called Voluntary Madness.
Voluntary Madness.
Yeah. That's it.
Voluntary Madness.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And I mean, I am just so. Inspired by someone who's that smart, who can see people outside of herself and just really get into their heads, because she does. And you know, it just humbles you. Some of the things you see in books that people, you know, you think you're a smart person until you read someone else and think, I never would have seen what she saw there.
That's why you read the book, right? Do you know these? These sound like they'd be intriguing to you, Nancy.
I do. I have not read them. I'm glad to hear an enthusiastic.
Yes.
It's really something. And thank you so much for having Nancy. I don't know how often you have Nancy on, but it is just so great to be able to write down books that somebody else says are good. And then I know when I go to the library to get it. and I want to tell you, too, I read Olive Kitteridge on the advice of Elizabeth Berg. She came to our library in Oshkosh, and someone in the group said, what are you reading now, or what do you like? And this was about a year ago,
right.
And I read it. And I just loved it, too. So thanks for bringing that one up and putting it out there. And I'll hang up now and listen to the rest of your wonderful advice.
Thank you, Quinn. Thanks. Thanks so much for the call.
Yeah. Bye.
There's a reader, huh?
Yeah. Another nonfiction book that I really loved came out last year, and it's called The Suicide Index by a woman named Joan Wickersham. And suicide is something I think that touches everybody one way or another, either directly or people we know,
yes,
or people we know who know people. But this is a book of by a woman who's looking at her father's suicide that occurred 10 years before she is writing this book. And it's a book, I think, that I thought it was wonderfully written. I thought that the way she arranged the book, I think, is very clever. She does it as an index, so that under various topics relating to suicide. But I think people who love to get inside other people's lives will really appreciate this book, too.
We go next to Jolene from Ashland. Hi, Jolene.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I've been reading the Elizabeth Peters books about Amelia Peabody and loving them. Is there anyone else that writes anything similar?
You know, she's pretty one of a kind. One of the things that she did, though, under her real name, which is Barbara Mertz, M-E-R-T-Z, she wrote two very, very, very accessible histories of Egypt.
Huh.
And you know that that's what she based all of her Amelia Peabody stuff on, you know, with that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So she's really a scholar, and then...
Yes, she must have had tons of research for those books.
And then she gave us that research, basically, in those two really interesting books about the history of Egypt. What I would look for, I think I would go to the library, and I would talk to the librarian about some other sort of light, cozy mysteries. And I think that's the top, that's the term that you would want to use.
Okay.
Now, have you read the Mrs. Polifax books?
No.
Okay. The Mrs. Polifax books are by Gilman, Dorothy Gilman, G-I-L-M-A-N. But with the Mrs. Polifax books, you only want to read the first four.
Okay.
Because they're wonderful, about a woman in her 60s who ends up volunteering to work for the CIA as a spy, and it's all the things that happen to her.
Okay.
And so the first four are just so much fun and so great. And the first one is actually set in, she ends up in Albania, and it's one of the only novels I know of that's actually set in Albania, but they're fun in the same way that the Amelia Peabody books are. Now, all the later books after the first four or five are not nearly as good.
Uh-huh.
So, but those are going to be the easier ones to find. So you really want to find just the early ones.
Okay.
And a librarian can help you find them.
The other thing I wanted to say is I love the nonfiction Winter Dance. That is one of my favorite books ever. I wish it would come out on tape.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it hasn't since then.
All of his other works are, except
right.
I can't find that one.
Huh.
But that one was excellent. Hysterical and just a joy to read.
Thanks for calling. I'm on this poetry kick this hour. You got me rolling. But you also, I know, and I'm interested in this book, and I know you interviewed, I believe, the author, Brian Hall, Fall of Frost.
Oh, yes, The Fall of Frost. Brian Hall, this is Brian's, I think, second or third novel where he takes a real person and then fictionalizes his life. And in this one, he fictionalized the life of Robert Frost. And Robert Frost was much more than that genial, the road last taken kind of, you know, whose woods these are, I think I know, that kind of New England guy, and had a very complex, difficult family life. And when I interviewed Brian Hall, I asked him, you know, why he chose this type of book to write, this one, and then he did one about Lewis and Clark before that. And he said, because he's not good at plot, particularly, and if you're doing it based on a real person, the plot is already given to you.
Ah.
And I thought, and then I read this really interesting thing in a novel that supposedly they can encode all of Charles Dickens' works on one strand of DNA, and so that in this book, this novel, so this is all sort of invented, that maybe we are all novels in somebody else's library.
Ah!
Isn't that fabulous thinking?
Yes. Yes,
I mean,
it is.
It's just so interesting what people come up with. And I just have to tell you about one book, Kathleen.
Okay.
And it's a book called, it's maybe one of the best books I read in 2008. It came out at the very end of the year. And it's called The Gone Away World.
The Gone Away World.
By Nick Harkaway, who happens to be John le Carré's son.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But he's writing in a totally different genre.
Huh.
And this is a book that is the kind of book where I can't tell you anything about it, because to say almost anything about it will be to give it away. But I can say that it's more or less science fiction, and it's more or less, I can't say anything else.
Oh, Nancy, that's going to make us all run out and get it.
You just have to trust me.
I do.
It's so
completely
good. It's so good. And I, you know, at one point I might have said more about it, but one of my students said that he really hated it when a reviewer said, and there's a plot twist or something like that in the middle, because then he spends his whole time waiting for that plot twist and wondering if he's going to recognize it when it shows up. So I don't want to say anything except that the writing is fabulous. It's just It's great writing. It's very funny in parts. There's a group of mimes who come in and take who play a sort of important role in the book, and it's just splendid. The Gone Away World.
Thank you, Nancy. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of people getting that one today. Nancy Pearl is our guest, and we're talking books this hour. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is our guest, and we have a couple emails here. Let's go do at least one of them, Nancy. Can you give us a young adult book that's under the radar?
A young adult book that's under the radar. For an older young adult, I would say 16 and up, I think a book that's under the radar and shouldn't be is Sunshine by Robin McKinley.
Okay.
Which is fantasy. And Gabe, another young adult book that's under the radar, I think, are the books by Gabriel Zevin, Z-E-V-I-N. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those are aimed at I think young women would enjoy them, but more than boys.
Okay.
Young men. But both of those are good authors for that.
Okay. Let's go next to where are we? Adam from Fox Lake. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Kathleen and Nancy. Thanks for taking my call. I have to make a brief disclaimer here, but I was delighted to find out that the cordless phone reached all the way to the greenhouse. So if Eric is listening, I've actually been able to keep working while waiting to get on the air. But anyway, I want to make a few suggestions. A contemporary author that I'm really fond of right now is Cormac McCarthy, and he wrote... Probably best known for having written No Country for Old Men, and I would suggest that, unless they've already made the mistake of doing so, that most listeners don't make the mistake of seeing the film before reading the book. I did that, and I went back and read the book, and the book's pretty awesome compared to the movie. In fact, I'm now, you know, more fond of the book, in fact. And then some of his other really good books are Sutri, Child of God is really good, and so is All the Pretty Horses. And I think they're making a film now of The Road, which is also a really good book of his. I wouldn't know how to describe his writing style. He's got kind of an archaic Faulkner style of writing, and his language is just surreal. It's amazing. In terms of a classic that I really enjoy, East of Eden by John Steinbeck would be an awesome summer read for anybody that hasn't read it. That's probably my favorite book of all time. And some poetry I really enjoy right now is a book by a musician, actually, named David Berman, and the name of his book is Actual Air. And I think it's a really powerful piece of contemporary poetry that's totally under the radar. He's an independent musician. They kind of just recently disbanded, but he was in a band for a long time called the Silver Jews, and they're also a really neat band. And he's got a really unique approach to poetry. I compare it maybe to Tony Hoagland or James Tate. It's really empirical and just very literal and not mundane, but it's not so, you know, it's not so metaphorical and flowery. It's kind of like to the point, and some images that just kind of slap you in the face. And it's really neat stuff. David Berman's his name, and the name of his book is Actual Air. And I don't know that he has any other books, but those are my suggestions.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, so thanks for the show, and I'll just keep listening and get back to work. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. It's a nice image, working in the greenhouse.
I know,
Earth
I can
Day.
Smell the flowers.
Thanks for your recommendations. Our number, we have a couple lines open. They've been jammed, 800-486-8655. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. Sally is next from Two Rivers. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Sally.
I feel like you're one of my best friends.
Well, thanks, Sally.
I feel that way, too, about her.
I feel that way about Nancy. I don't know you, Sally, but...
And Nancy, I'm a former librarian, so I'm a great fan of yours.
All right, we're all buddies then.
Yeah, yeah. You were talking about dog books in which dogs play a prominent role, and a book I read that was so powerful and so traumatic for me was a book called The Underneath by Kathy Appelt, who's a Texas girl. And I'm just wondering, Nancy, if you've read that book and what your comments were about it.
I have not read it. I know I know of the author.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't read that.
The book was a finalist last year for National Book Award, and I think it was a Newbery Honor book as well.
Uh-huh.
Kathleen, I don't know if you could, as an animal lover, that was my problem. That's what made it just so traumatic.
Yeah. I remember one little boy talking about a book he read, and I said, "Can you describe that book?" And he said, "No dead dogs."
Oh. And I think Katz has said that to promote one of his books, saying there are no dead dogs. No dog dies in this book because it's hard for people to take.
Well, and I don't want to give anything away, but that's not quite the circumstance for this book.
Right. I hear you, dog. What do you have?
Oh, I have mutts.
Oh, how many do you have?
They're all great big Texas dogs that came off the side of the road and came up to Wisconsin with me.
Oh, Sally.
The book is so traumatic. It's actually a children's book, but I don't know who to recommend it to because it's just so powerful. But I must say the ending is so beautiful, so stunning, that it's pretty much worth the trauma.
Hmm.
Oh, good.
Okay.
So I would recommend it to someone. I'm just not sure who. But thank you very much.
Thanks, Sally. I remember that brought back a memory of when my son entered this Wisconsin Humane Society competition when he was in kindergarten. And it was about the death of his dog, Nancy. And he won a prize for it. And I think it was partially because it's something everybody goes through.
Yes.
You know, he was 5 years old and it was a big thing in life. And it's part of the whole cycle. It's part of the whole thing.
Well, I think we need another funny book about a dog, and the book that I would suggest is called The Dog Who Wouldn't Be.
Okay.
By Farley Mowat.
Oh my gosh, Farley Mowat. Yes, yes.
And the dog's name is Mutt, and it's set mostly on the prairies of Saskatchewan in the 30s, and there is an unforgettably hilarious scene of Mutt riding in the back of a roadster, an open roadster, wearing sunglasses to keep the dust out of his eyes. And, I mean, that is such a wonderful book about a boy and a dog, the dog who wouldn't be.
Thank you. All right, let's go next to Kay from Okwanago. Hello, Kay.
Hi.
Hi.
What a great program. I wanted to recommend, it took me a while to read it, but it's called Shadow Country by Peter Matheson.
Oh, Matheson. Oh, yes.
It's just a beautiful book. You learn so much about the Everglades, and he's a environmental activist. I've read his book on cranes. It took me a couple months to read it. There's a lot of characters, but he puts them all in the front, their family trees, and I had never heard of this Watson person down there who's a mythical person who went down there right after the native people moved out, but I can't recommend it highly enough. It's just, I think, beautifully written, and I wonder if Nancy had read it.
Yes, I did read it, and I would agree with you absolutely. What Peter Matheson did in this book, in Shadow Country, was take three of his earlier novels, the Watson novels trilogy, and rewrote them, totally rewrote them, some 10 years later, you know, a long time after he wrote these books, these earlier books, and then produced Shadow Country, which will take you months and months to read, but you are so immersed in the world of the Everglades and the characters. Oh, I totally agree. It's a wonderful book. I think that people who look at it and look at the size of the type, you know, think, oh my gosh, this is all I'm going to do for the next, you know, for the rest of my life is read this book. But in a funny way, it's fast moving. I mean, it slows you down because his language is so wonderful, you know, because he can write so well. But it's fast moving in that things happen. And you learn so much about the way the world was then, the way the United States were at that time. The United States was at that time.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the call. We have time for maybe one more phone call. Jim from Fond du Lac. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. A book or some books that I've recently really, really enjoyed. I'm a Navy man, and I picked up some Patrick O'Brien on the advice of a friend of mine. I don't know if I could recommend it to anybody because they are very difficult to read. He writes in this 18th century English wording, and it's but it is so descriptive, and the characters, you know, we're talking about salty sea dogs from the Royal Navy and the way they sailed and engaged with the Americans and the French and the Spanish and Captain Jack Aubrey and the people that he interacts with. I really enjoy Patrick O'Brien's writing. I'm wondering, is there anybody else who writes an historical fiction, nautical type of book out there? And if Nancy can recommend anything.
We have about 10 seconds,
okay.
Nancy.
C.F. Forrester. Horatio Hornblower books.
Okay.
Take a look at those.
Right. Oh, you're so good. Thank you, Nancy, so much. It was a fun hour.
Pleasure.
Happy Earth Day. Nancy Pearl, our guest, and it's wonderful to know she's writing a new book, Wanderlust, and we'll talk to her when that comes out. Thanks, everybody, for all your calls. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, and thanks for calling with all of your recommendations. It was great. This show repeats tonight at 10 in case you missed something, because I can't keep track of everything that was said, so listen tonight. Tell somebody about the books. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.